Good afternoon. I'd like to go into the plunge into this text for Zanke, but one comment that Lori had after the talk, which I thought was interesting and relevant, in that verse from that section from Genjo Koan, the nature of wind is permanent. Because of that, the wind of the Buddha's house brings forth the gold of the earth and makes fragrant the cream of the long river. She was remembering a lecture by Richard Baker, where he was suggesting that the metaphor of the ripening of grapes might be, in a sense, a better metaphor, in that the wind is a condition for the development of for bringing forth. This bringing forth is a little obscure, but it's like the wind and the rain and the environment are conditions for the ripening of the grapes, which then continue to transform into wine or grape juice, relevant to what you drink. I thought that was it's somehow a little more to the point than somehow the gold of the earth makes fragrant the cream of the long river. But that was just her thought, and I thought I would share it. What I'd like to do is, let's read this, and I think that I like the practice of reading and the practice of listening. So what I'm going to suggest is let's go down the line and down the line and just each have one person read a section until we get to the end. It's not very long. Mary, would you like to begin?
The great way of all Buddhas, thoroughly practiced.
Speak up.
The great way of all Buddhas, thoroughly practiced, is emancipation and realization. Emancipation means that in birth you are emancipated from birth. In death you are emancipated from death. Thus there is detachment from birth and death, and penetrating birth and death. Such is the complete practice of the great way. There is letting go of birth and death, and vitalizing birth and death. Such is the thorough practice of the great way. Realization is birth. Birth is realization. At the time of realization, there is nothing but birth, totally actualized. Nothing but death, totally actualized.
Such activity makes birth holy birth, death holy death. Actualized just so at this moment, this activity is neither large nor small, neither immeasurable nor measurable, neither remote nor urgent. Birth in its right nowness is undivided activity. Undivided activity is birth in its immediacy.
Birth neither comes nor goes. Birth neither appears nor is already existing. Thus, birth is totally manifested. Death is totally manifested.
Do you know that there are innumerable beings in yourself? Also, there is birth and there is death. Quietly think over whether birth and all things that arise together with birth are inseparable or not. There is neither a moment nor a thing that is apart from birth. There is neither an object nor a mind that is apart from birth.
Birth is just like riding in a boat. You raise the sails and row with the oar. Although you row, the boat gives you a ride, and without the boat, no one could ride. But you ride in the boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. Investigate a moment such as this. At just such a moment, there is nothing but the world of the boat. The sky, the water, and the shore all are the boat's world, which is not the same as a world that is not the boats. When you ride in a boat, your body and mind and the environs together are the undivided activity of the boat. The entire earth and the entire sky are both the undivided activity of the boat. Thus, birth is nothing but you. You are nothing but birth.
Then Master Yuan Wu, priest Kekin, said, birth is undivided activity. Death is undivided activity. Clarify and investigate these words. What you should investigate is, while the undivided activity of birth has no beginning or end, and covers the entire earth and the entire sky, it hinders neither birth's undivided activity nor death's undivided activity. At the moment of death's undivided activity, while it covers the entire earth and the entire sky, it hinders neither death's undivided activity nor birth's undivided activity. This being so, birth does not hinder death. Death does not hinder birth.
Both the entire earth and the entire sky appear in birth as well as in death. However, it is not that one and the same entire earth and sky are fully manifested in birth and also fully manifested in death. Although not the same, not many. Similarly, in birth there is undivided activity of all things, and in death there is undivided activity of all things. There is undivided activity in what is not birth and not death. There is birth and there is death and undivided activity.
This being so, the undivided activity of birth and death is like a young man bending and stretching his arm. Or it is like someone asleep, searching with his hand behind his head for a pillow. This is realization in vast, wondrous light.
About just such a moment, you may suppose that because realization is manifested in undivided activity, there was no realization prior to this. However, prior to this realization, undivided activity was manifested. But undivided activity manifested previously does not hinder the present realization of undivided activity. Because of this, your understanding can be manifested moment after moment.
Okay, thank you. So, a little something about the title before we look at the structure. The title is Zen Yi, and Zen means, in this case, this character Zen means total or whole, complete, entire, and this is what Kaz and Ed Brown translate as undivided, meaning unified, whole. Ki is interesting. This is variously translated, as I said earlier, as undivided activity or total dynamic working on functioning fully, or the whole works, which is kind of my favorite sort of wordplay from Thomas Cleary. But what Shohaku Okamura was talking about, and in the commentary, Dr. Abe talks about, this word ki has something of the feeling of a machine. An early Chinese machine like a loom. So a loom, as it works, has these two dimensions to it, right? It has what, you know, the warp and the woof. And those of you who weave probably know what those are, and I don't, I just know the words. But I believe it's two axes of the fabric. Is that correct? Right. So, but what's interesting about a loom is the activity is coordinated so that you work one petal and it pulls these threads together in this interdependent, interacting fashion. Is that correct? Those of you who know?
The warp and the weft are the cords or strings that go this way, that you slide back and forth, versus the ones that are pulled taut by the loom and that you're interweaving them.
As you work a petal, right?
Right, because there are two sets of the ones that go from top to bottom and they alternate so that some go up, you send the yarn through, and then they reverse and then you send it through again.
Right. So, what this is saying, you know, this is something like it's a metaphor for our practice, for zazen. By applying your effort at one point, you are weaving together these different strands of reality into the fabric of life. And you don't have to take this metaphor too far, but so what you have in the end is out of these different threads and these different dimensions, you have, if everything is working correctly and is in alignment, which is another question, you have one fabric in the end, right? That fabric is, you could call it your life. But in what Dogen is talking about here is it's life dash and dash death, or birth dash and death dash death. It's what you have in that verse from Engo, life fully manifests its function, death fully manifests its function as well, all within the limits of great unbounded space. Great unbounded space is birth and death together as one undivided activity. Does that make some sense? Is there a question about that? Or everybody gets that? Getting it is the hard part. Using it is the challenge. So that's something about the title, and I think that this working in alignment is what's implied as well by this, you know, interesting pre-industrial metaphor of a machine. We have to be in alignment. This is fanning yourself, is being in alignment with reality. It's an effort that we have to make. If you do not work the pedal, you'll have two skeins of wool that are sitting on separate spools, right? And they won't make a fabric, and they won't function. So, again, we come back to this effort, and Dogen is always talking about this effortless effort. And this effort also you could think of as our offering. This is what we have been given, our birth, hence our life, and our practice is then to continue and offer in alignment with the rest of life. There's also some question, you know, in the language of the text about are we talking about living? Sometimes it's translated as living life and death, or as living and dying, and sometimes as birth and death. And this again is a matter of a kind of shifting perspective or view. These conditions are always in motion, and we have a different perspective on them from moment to moment. Life and death is kind of the way we ordinarily see our existence. It's like, oh, alive one moment and not alive another moment. Whereas birth and death is the nature, from a Buddhist perspective, it's the nature of our view of reality, that everything is moment by moment being born, and in the next moment it slips away. It's used differently according to what is appropriate. So let's look at this first section, or the first couple of propositions. I'll read you two translations of these. I like both of them. So the one we read, the great way of all Buddhas, thoroughly practiced, is emancipation and realization. Emancipation means that in birth, you are emancipated from birth. In death, you are emancipated from death. Thus, there is attachment from birth and death, and penetrating birth and death. Such is the complete practice of the great way. There is letting go of birth and death and vitalizing birth and death. Such is the thorough practice of the great way. Realization is birth. Birth is realization. At the time of realization, there is nothing but birth totally actualized, nothing but death totally actualized. Such activity makes birth holy birth and death holy death. Actualized just so at this moment, this activity is neither large nor small, neither immeasurable nor remote, nor urgent, neither immeasurable, neither remote nor urgent. Birth in its right nowness is undivided activity. Undivided activity is birth in its immediacy. That's difficult language, I think. If you haven't seen, there's an entire translation of Shobo Genzo that's online, that's free, from Nierman at Shasta Abbey. Have people seen that? His language is pretty accessible. So let me read that same passage. When we thoroughly explore what the great way of the Buddha is, we find that it is liberation from delusion and letting our true self manifest to the full. For some, this liberation from delusion means that life liberates us from life and death liberates us from death. Therefore, both our getting out of birth and death and our entering into birth and death, birth and death as one thing, are the great way. Both are laying birth and death aside and are going beyond birth and death to the other shore are also the great way. Our true self revealing itself to the full is what life is, and life is our true self revealing itself to the full. So this is the way Dogen always or often works. He's covering all the propositions, right? It's like in Genjo Koan, the beginning of Genjo Koan, as all things are Buddha Dharma, there is delusion and realization. Practice and birth and death, they're Buddhas and sentient beings. That's proposition one. As the myriad things are without an abiding self, there is no delusion, no realization, no Buddha, no sentient being, no birth and death. Proposition two. The Buddha way is basically leaping clear of the many and the one. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. That's proposition three. Once you unpack this a little, and I think this applies to what he's saying here, proposition one is what you might call the Hinayana perspective, that there's delusion and it's distinct from realization. There's birth, which is distinct from death. There are Buddhas who are distinct from sentient beings. The second proposition is the Mahayana perspective. It's like the Heart Sutra. No abiding self, there's no delusion, there's no realization, there's no Buddha, there's no birth, there's no death, there's no sentient beings. It's just, you know, no, 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 no. Don't get caught on some idea of what reality is. Be free from that. But it's framed as a negation. And this is, in each case, these are appropriate medicines for what ails us existentially. Sometimes we really need to know that there's a distinction between Buddhas and sentient beings. And sometimes we just need to hear no, because we're, you know, not this, not this, not this, because we keep wanting to say something is real. And that creates an illness for us. So this is medicine for that illness, the illness of our views. And then you have Dogen likes to identify himself with the Buddha way, the Buddha Yana, which is what is it in is it in Ulysses? Here comes everything.
Here comes everybody.
Here comes everybody.
Finnegan's Wake.
What? Finnegan's Wake. Yeah. It's like everything is coming forth. Everyone is coming forth. So it's basically leaping clear of the many and the one, including both of those sides, but not being caught by any of them. Thus, there are birth and death, delusion and realization, sentient beings and Buddhas. And this is where he's coming to in this section. So he presents these various positions.
Alan?
Yeah.
It's interesting that in that Genjo Koan passage that you read, there's one inconsistent item.
Which is?
Practice. Do you notice that in the first series, there is all these things in practice, and practice never gets negated?
That's
everything
right.
Everything else does. I don't know if...
You're right.
I doubt if it's a typo. I think it's an intentional without emphasizing it, that somehow he's saying that practice is a different thing than all this other stuff.
Well, I wonder about that.
You know, he doesn't say there's no practice.
No, he doesn't say there's no
practice. He says all the other things can be plus or minus.
Mm-hmm. But I think that in that first proposition, maybe he's including practice because we think there's some separation. We think that practice is somehow distinct from our life, and in the others, it's not. So it need not be mentioned. Maybe. I don't know. But this is part of where what he's talking about in the Genjo Koan, what Sojin writes. What Dogen seems to be saying is, life does not impede life, death does not impede death, death does not impede life, and life does not impede death. So he has the four aspects of birth and death covered. It's very typical of Dogen to cover all the possibilities. And this is just like, Dogen is doing in a poetic way what he's kind of bringing Nagarjuna to life, and you know what Nagarjuna says: everything is real and is not real, both real and not real, neither real and not real. This is Lord Buddha's teaching. So it's the same in a kind of really condensed way. Nagarjuna is presenting these same propositions. But this question of, it's interesting,
separation, there's this dynamic coming and going and interacting with all of that, that makes that third alternative.
Yeah. And there is not attachment to it. This is one of the, you know, thus there is detachment from birth and death and penetrating birth and death. So this detachment from birth and death, which sounds very abstract, Suzuki Roshi said someplace in one of his comments, or it was reported, he said, "Don't worry, you can die," which we think we can't, you know, for this gets back to, you know, what I was saying, boiling down Buddhism to, you can do this. You can die, which is good. You know, you can let go in this momentary sense, in each moment of whether that moment is difficult or that moment is joyous, and in the larger sense of your life, which is moving on through time.
Can I just
clarify? Yeah, yeah.
You know, to me, what I hear when I hear detachment is that you see the emptiness of it,
yeah,
so you don't grab onto it. And then when I hear penetrating it, you actually see both. You see both the emptiness of it and the fact that there's a conventional coming and going. that's also happening. So you penetrate past the emptiness into the emptiness of the emptiness.
But in the Nierman translation, which is interesting, he says, where this is says, thus there is detachment from birth and death and penetrating birth and death. Nierman says, therefore, both are getting out of birth and death.
Which is the emptiness part.
Which is also the, it's the early Buddhist part. It's like, this is the goal. The goal is to get out of birth and death. And the or entering into birth and death. So here you have the definition of samsara. So the goal is, you know, we have these four marks of existence, at least in Mahayana. You have life is marked by dukkha, or suffering. Impermanence, non-self, and nirvana. So nirvana, dukkha, and nirvana is bracketing these two marks, impermanence and non-self, which seem, those seem to be somewhat non-negotiable. Dukkha and nirvana are maybe negotiable in, or realizable, let's put it that way. Dukkha means being caught in this world, in what we call samsara. And what samsara means, in a kind of literal way, it means to flow on or to continue. It means the transmigration through various lives and various realms. And we suffer because, you know, according to Buddhist doctrine, because we're constantly migrating both moment by moment and life by life through these six worlds or through these realms. Nirvana in early Buddhism means you're off the wheel, right? In Mahayana and in Dogen's way of looking at it, you see through this. You see birth and death as one fabric. And therefore, you find liberation right in this moment. So that's the penetrating birth and death. And then he says, such is the complete practice of the great way. There is letting go of birth and death, and here in this translation, vitalizing birth and death. In most of the other translations, what they're saying is crossing over birth and death, which means, which is bodhisattva activity, bringing other beings across that barrier and going back again and again to bring beings across. This is your vow. You recognize that there are people who are suffering, who are caught in this conception of the separation of birth and death, and you keep going back to the other shore to bring them across. Does that make sense? So this is, you know, so his further exposition as he's unpacking. The word that they use, the great way of all Buddhas, in the first line, thoroughly practiced, is emancipation and realization. Emancipation in the word in Japanese is todatsu, which means freedom from, or the ability to change or to continue. So it means not being stuck in this one place, not being stuck in your idea of what it means to be alive or what it means to die. And then realization, the word that he's using here is genjo, as in genjo koan. It means manifestation, but it's a manifestation that has particular conditions, the moment that we're in, the moment of our life. That our realization doesn't take place anywhere else but right now. And this is, so this is like the first section of this fascicle is, we can wake up right now, whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not. It's possible, in the same sense that, you know, if you really study Nagarjuna and you can understand that philosophical language and that kind of intensely logical presentation, he deconstructs reality and you're free. Dogen is doing it in another way, through his kind of poetic and free use of the language, hoping to wake us up. Not just by the words, but also by pointing us back towards our life, which includes Zazen. As Ken was pointing out, I'm not sure that this text ever uses the word practice. Does it?
Zenki?
Yeah.
Yeah, it says practice.
Does it?
Yeah, in the first section, it talks about practice of the great way, thorough practice.
Yeah. Okay. All right, good.
Complete practice of the way.
So that practice, right. That practice includes what we're doing here in all the other hours when we're not listening to this talk. And it includes the practice of your entire life. Expanding that practice, expanding your understanding of practice to include your whole life. So let's see. Are there any questions or thoughts? Yeah.
I have two questions.
Yes, please.
First one, could you translate the ki in Zenki as life force?
Different character.
Okay.
Yeah. You mean ki, is it like in chi?
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's a different character.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the second question, could we say that this text is an early take on a non-dual way of looking at things?
You could. I don't know how early it is. You know, I mean, there certainly are non-dual teachings that go way back within the Buddhist tradition and go back within Indian religion and philosophy. Mm-hmm. Go very, very far back, I think. It certainly is a unique and relatively new, I think, relatively new Japanese expression of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But you find it, but he's just also picking it up from Chinese Zen, which is deeply non-dual in its own way, that is really has a very different flavor, I think, than the Indian. If that makes sense. Yeah.
What this has made me think about, and I wonder if you think it's a helpful thing to think of in context of this, from this morning and then now, especially when you said that this relies on a shift in perspective. Does this have anything to do with thinking of ourselves sort of the same way we might think of a cell in our body, in that our cells die all the time, but our body is still complete?
Yes.
And we're kind of like that in the context of existence, if we're not taking the perspective of ourselves.
Well, I think this is a really important and difficult question. I was listening to the tapes with Shohaku-san, I heard there was question and answer, and I heard Andrea Thash on the question and answer, and she was saying, wondering aloud, well, is this useful to her terminal patients? That's a pretty good question, I think. What?
It's not an obvious yes. I think it would be to me if I could, you know, internalize it enough. You know, it's really hard to disidentify, perhaps,
yeah,
when you're in dire straits.
Well, I think you've just hit the nail on the head, if you could internalize it. And so, yes, if you can see yourself as identical in kind or in the sense of impermanence as one of your cells, and sort of disidentify with, let go of this clutching after being, in that sense, I think it's very similar. And if you can do that, and ultimately, I think this is one of the things that I love that saying, that line from Suzuki Roshi, you can die. You know, you are able to do that, and ultimately, every one of us will. Every one of us will let go. And it's like, you know, there's, I don't know how many of you have read The Death of Ivan Illich by Tolstoy. You know, it's like this kind of this illusory life, terrible family, difficult job, horrible disease that comes on, you know, and it just, the shift gets worse and worse and worse and worse, you know, and in the last moment, he wakes up as he's letting go. Now, how did Tolstoy know that? We don't know. It's an encouraging reality. In the end, we all let go, whether we've been previously inclined to do so or not. But I think it comes back to, I think the question that that Andrea was asking on the tape, I mean, I tend to agree with Paul. Yes, this is very encouraging, but as I was saying this morning, the critical question is, how? You know, first of all, how do you convey this in a way that people can relax or let go of their anxiety about existence, let go of the clutching after it? And then, when it's you, how do you actually do this? That's a critical question. And Dogen, so this is, we've all heard this metaphor of talk about koan work of pecking and tapping, where when a chick is about to be born, it's tapping from the inside because its time has come to be born, to move from one state of being an egg into the state of being a chick. So the chick is tapping from the inside, and the hen, you know, I've never seen this. Has anyone seen this? You hear about this. You have? Does this actually happen?
Yeah.
Oh, good. Yeah. That's good to know. I mean, it shows you how little I know about real life. Presumably, the hen is pecking from the outside, helping to crack the shell. So this is, you could say, total dynamic working, right? This is life helping birth along. And it I think I'd like to see it. It must be a wonderful thing to see. I've seen other births that were certainly totally dynamic and amazing and somewhat marked by bodily fluids of different kinds, and completely incredible. It takes total dynamic working to bring that forth. And I think a lot of us also have seen people pass away, which also is affected by our presence. For some reason, I'm really thinking, just right this moment, I'm thinking about our friend Rebecca, and some of us, a couple of us in this room, spent time with her as she was dying. Everybody said, oh, she's going to die tomorrow. You know, she was supposed to die pretty suddenly. But what happened was she was surrounded by love. This is, you know, she was surrounded by what is the line? Moment by moment manifestation of sincere hearts. I actually feel very emotional even just thinking about it, you know. And whether this is good or not good, you know, the family ended up moving her from this home that she was in, which was an okay place, to one of their daughter's homes. And it seemed like a kind of radical and precipitous thing to do at the moment when that happened, and we had to call, you know, had to call an ambulance and get a hospital bed and set up all this stuff. It was a lot of activity. But once she was there, it's like, this is really the right place. There was no question that this was the right place for her to be. And she took a lot of time to die. She took, 17 days? Something like that. Surrounded by sincere hearts. And, you know, that was how she moved through this phase. And this is why, you know, thinking about, even though her responsiveness was limited and her consciousness may have been limited, you felt that still there's fully functioning human being up until this last moment. everyone was also reckoning with the process of our own letting go. Let's take a 5-minute break, okay? And people can use the bathroom. I need to use the bathroom. Come back in 5 minutes.
Can we pause and resume?
I see. I don't know how to pause it. I forget.
You I see a pause button.
Okay. Try that.
It's still going.
It's going in timing?
The clock's still ticking.
I believe it.
Okay, let her rip.
Did you ever see the movie The Tree of Life?
No, that's a new
really
one.
It's a great movie.
Is that a new movie?
It's a new movie.
Yeah, by, I forget the guy's name.
Because I really actually felt watching that movie that I was seeing real. I was actually penetrating, you know, it was amazing. They had this incredible photography of probably the sun, Mars, you know, places where, you know, there's just all of a sudden this dynamic wind, everything, volcanoes arising and volcanoes going down. Waves, giant waves, come and go. Wind comes and goes. Rain, you know, I mean, it's just like the way the world works in this incredibly dynamic way that makes you feel like a little dot. And you get it. I'm a little dot in this enormous cosmos that is dynamically doing what it's doing at every moment, and I think that it really matters.
Well, it might, though. I mean, it does. Reality is different if you're not participating in it. To this?
Mm-hmm.
Let's wait. On a bit, but Mary had a question.
I can't forego a question if you want.
Well, now you
now I, okay.
Tantalize me.
Well, this morning I was interested in your talking about your 5-year-old self and your 60-something self, and the how they never meet. They is the way you put it.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to me because I'm thinking about my this. I mean, I'm thinking about my 10 minutes ago self and my this morning self and my now self. Mm-hmm. And are they completely independent? Are they at all determining one another? Or is the idea of emancipation the idea that in each moment one is anew and potentially completely different?
Would you like to hear what Sojin Roshi says?
Yes.
Says right here on the page. There was a question someone asked. This is from talk in North Carolina. The question was, sounds like in the moment when you make what you consider an embarrassing mistake, it's relevant, right?
Yes.
That does not impede the next moment when you can be completely clear again. Sojin Roshi says, there's always the possibility of recovery on each moment, but it means that each moment's activity is independent and at the same time includes everything. It covers the whole universe. And then he says, I like this a lot, in Zazen, when we narrow our activity to focus on one activity totally, everything is included moment by moment. So, it's not that you're Mary this morning is not the same person as Mary this afternoon. It's just they never meet. They are independent and interdependent. One way that Shohaku-san talks about this is your hand. Your hand is it has 5 fingers. But the fingers and the hand, if you look at the fingers, they're fingers. If you look at the hand, it's a hand. It says the fingers never meet. Something called the finger never meets something called the hand. And this is just, this is the philosophical perspective on it, the phenomenological perspective on it. But in reality, the 5 fingers are completely integral, or however many you have, you could have lost a finger, are completely integral to this thing that we call the hand. It's just you can't have them. If you take away the 5 fingers, you don't have a hand. If you take away the hand, you have a bunch of fingers lying around. So they're interdependent and they're dependent. They're distinct and they're part of a process simultaneously. And this is as far as we can go in language. The question is, how do you use this? And how are you fluid and not getting stuck in one position or the other?
There's another where I think sometimes when in the case of having done something embarrassing, for example, we're in that situation, we're embarrassed, and we may continue to feel bad about that indefinitely, and then again, we may arrive at a point sooner or later where we look at ourselves or at that moment objectively, and that could be when we laugh at ourselves or when we confess, oh, I did this thing, or but the difference is that the state of, you know, whatever happened still happened, and it has some connection with you, but you're no longer caught by it.
Right.
And often people are doing this kind of unconsciously. It's not a strategy exactly, but I've noticed that there's a kind of relief. It's almost blissful when you arrive at this point where you just said, boy, I really screwed up, or can you believe how silly I was, or something like this. And at that point, it's as if it's another person. You're not worried about it. And yet, in another sense, you can say, well, yeah, that's me, you know, that, you know, I have a connection there. But you're no longer hung up in it. You know, there's like that freedom from that you're within that person, and yet you're totally separate. It's like somebody a million miles away or a million years ago it could be. And so you can just laugh and say, look at that, you know.
Is that the emancipation he's talking about?
Yeah, that's free from being, it's not being caught in the sense that this mistake you made or this thought you had and this thing you did is fixed forever in reality. You know, that it defines you. It doesn't necessarily define you. It's not that it didn't happen. But you are not that activity. You know, you have moved on. So the next sentence here that I wanted to talk about is, Ed just in this translation says, know that there are innumerable beings in yourself. And this has been a very important teaching for me. It comes about in a different direction. It comes in the Platform Sutra, in the Bodhisattva vows that Huineng offers. The way we're going to chant it at the end here is, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to awaken with them or save them. In Huineng's version, and we're not sure whether this is a good translation or not, but it's sort of been proliferated, sentient beings of my mind are numberless, I vow to save them all. I find this incredibly useful. It's a really useful way of looking at myself, you know. So, I may be anxious, or I may be irritated, or I may be grieving. All of this is a birth. When those states of mind arise, I'm born in a realm. You know, don't take the realm too literally, but you can be born as a hungry ghost, you can be born as a fighting demon, you know, you can be born as an animal, you can be born as a human, you can be born in the blissful realm of being a god, where you're just kind of, well, just completely blissed out. These are rebirths, samsara. And we don't live in them forever. They kind of have a lifespan. But when a state of mind arises, this is very much a Zen perspective, the rebirth is moment by moment. And at the moment, you know, certainly if it's a really strong emotion, like sort of Ken was talking about, you know, if I'm really upset or I've really done something stupid, then you feel like this being is real. But it's not. It's impermanent. And so the question here, I think, and this is where you get back to, and this verse is so wonderful. I mean, it's this sort of discovering it today.
this is a moment by moment manifestation. Can I have a manifestation of a sincere heart? Can I apply that sincere heart, bring it to bear on that sentient being that's in myself? If it's suffering, can I take care of it in the sense of the Metta Sutta, just as a mother watches over and protects her only child, so with a boundless mind does one suffuse love over the entire world? Which does not mean without boundaries or without strictness or, you know, but it means unconditional love. So it's in a sense, to me, when I read this whole fascicle, I'm hearing the sincere heart is the unconditional love that pervades the awakened attitude towards birth and death. This is a way that we can take care of ourselves and take care of each other. In the next sentence, it's really nice. He says this. Know that there are innumerable beings in yourself. Also, there is birth and there is death. Of course, there is birth. We've been born, and of course, there is death. This is going to occur. And there is the moment by moment birth and death. But then he says, quietly think over whether birth and all things that arise together with birth are inseparable or not. It's like, slow down, quiet down, sit, have a compassionate attitude. Just quietly think over. It's like, not agitatedly, not urgently, just take your time and see, does this perspective, does it make sense? Is it helpful? And if it is, then practice it. I really like this section. And then comes this, just right in the middle of it, you have this metaphor. This birth is just like riding in a boat.
Hey, Alan?
Yeah.
The section four, which you just read before there, it starts, at least in the second sentence, it starts talking just about birth. It doesn't include death explicitly, but it makes sense. Isn't it also true that you could substitute the word death in place of birth there, and it's equally true? It's not just about birth, it's about...
You're talking about the quietly think over?
Yeah.
Yes. Let me just look at... looking at another translation.
There's neither an object or a mind that is apart from death.
Right. That's right.
He just stops bothering to repeat himself, you know, to say it's true for death as well. And just, you know, that's implied. Death and all things that
there's an interesting note
aside with death are inseparable or not. It's obvious what I'm saying. I guess I'm just making a point that it's obvious. Tell me if I'm wrong, though.
No, you're right. And the note in the Abbe Waddell translation speaks to that. The following passage, that passage which we were quoting, part of which comes in the Vimalakirti Sutra. The body consists of all dharmas combined together. When it is produced, it is dharmas only that is produced. When it perishes, it is dharmas only that perish. When these dharmas are produced, we do not say an I is produced. When these dharmas perish, we do not say an eye perishes, right? So that, yeah, you're on the mark there. Yeah, I think he just was compressing a little.
Yes, exactly. He compresses elsewhere.
Yeah, he does a lot. And the question in this translation is, so in a lot of the other translations, instead of birth, they use life. Life includes birth and death, strictly speaking. So it's a little confusing when you use birth. So I think it's just a translation. That's just a translation thing. So birth is just like riding in a boat. Or life, let's do it this way. Life is just like riding in a boat. Is that okay? You raise the sails and row with the oar. Although you row, the boat gives you a ride, and without the boat, no one could ride. But you ride the boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. Investigate a moment such as this. At just such a moment, there is nothing but the world of the boat. The sky, the water, and the shore, all are the boat's world, which is not the same as a world that is not the boat's. When you ride in a boat, your body and mind and the environs together are the undivided activity of the boat. The entire earth and entire sky are both the undivided activity of the boat. Thus, life is nothing but you. You are nothing but life. It's interesting. Let me read you Dr. Abe's translation. Life is like a man riding a boat. Aboard the boat, he uses a sail. He takes the tiller. He pulls the boat along. Yet the boat carries him, and without the boat, he is not there. By riding in the boat, she makes it a boat. You must concentrate yourself to studying and penetrating this very time. All of a sudden we're talking about time. At this time, all is the world of the boat. So where Kaz uses when, Dr. Abhi is using at this time. All is the world of the boat. The heavens, the water, the shore, all become the boat's time. And they are not the same as time, which is not the boat. It is for this reason that life is what I make to exist, and I is what life makes me, and so on. I think this is a really, I like Dr. Abhi's translation a lot. But the point is the interaction of oneself and the boat creates the function of the boat. Yeah.
So for me, this goes back to the discussion we were having this morning about self and self-power and other power.
Okay.
Right? So there is this way in which, so we can talk about it as I'm rowing the boat, right? So it has this kind of self-power feeling.
Right.
We can talk about it as I'm being carried along by the boat. There's this kind of other power feeling.
Right.
But that what it's sort of the loom, right? It's in the dynamic, it's this.
Yeah.
Like what which is it? It's actually rowing.
It's rowing, but you're carried along as you row.
That's right.
Then there's motion, right?
And so both ways of framing it are kind of one sided.
Right.
Right. Or miss what's actually happening.
Right.
Which is, you know.
So this is leaping beyond the one and the many, or including the one and the many as one, as the all within the limits of the great unbounded space. And this is, you know, he uses this, he also uses this boat metaphor in a slightly different way in Getrogon, right? Mm-hmm. When you ride in the boat, and watch the shore, you might assume that the shore is moving. But when you keep your eyes closely on the boat, you can see that the boat moves. Similarly, if you examine myriad things with a confused body and mind, you might suppose that your mind and nature are permanent. But when you practice intimately and return to where you are, it will be clear that nothing at all has an unchanging self, which also means everything has an interdependent self. That the act of stepping in the boat makes it a boat. And the act of rowing gives it the activity.
Can I say one
more? Yeah, please.
And then just to say this next bit, so then that world that's created together by me and the boat, right, by the activity, is not like, what do they say? Is not the same as a world that is not the boat's.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a different world because of that functioning together.
Yeah. What I like about Dr. Abe's is we can get stuck on world. So at this time, all is the world of the boat. At this time, all is the world of the boat. The heavens, the water, the shore, all become the boat's time. And they are not the same as time, which is not the boat. So it's sort of all of a sudden you're shifting your focus from place to time. Time as a dynamic activity. Time is something that's moving, whereas place, I think, has a kind of more static feel in my head. But they're dynamic. Place and time. Can I read you something? I've been looking at songs. I've been learning songs lately. I found this great song from a group called the Flatlanders. People know of them? Joe Ely, Jimmy Dale Gilmore, and Butch Hancock. This song is called Just About Time. Everybody's saying it's just about time, but it's partly about space. The rest is all about not dividing things up and leaving every last piece in its place. You can start out slow, you can speed things up, you can take things as they are. Your average person is afraid to talk about death, but not afraid of driving a car. Take the whole ball of wax, stick it to the facts. Life might stop on a dime. Sooner or later, it's now or never. Don't you think it's just about time? It's pretty cool for country song. I know. I met him in Texas last month, and he and his wife, they read the Avatamsaka Sutra in bed before they go to sleep. I don't know. Or soporific. That would put me to sleep pretty quick. I thought it was very cute, though. This might be a relatively good place to stop before we get to a number of koans and towards the end of this. So I think we'll talk about this tomorrow and then move on to Shoji. But any last questions or thoughts? Yeah.
Would you say that this phrase that you mentioned earlier, all within the limits of the great unbounded space,
mm-hmm.
isn't it a koan?
yes, it's and not only is it a koan, but it's commentary. It's literally commentary on a koan. You know, it's commentary, as I said, on this this case 55 of the Blue Cliff record, where Chinyuan is banging on the coffin, saying, wanting to know alive or dead, and his teacher says, "I won't say." His teacher is maybe also saying, "One can't say." And this is Ingo's commentary on that, and this is the wonderful there's a commentary on the commentary which Shohaku-san quoted, saying this poem is placing a flower on the great brocade of the universe. So it's like extra. Or is it actually making it more beautiful? Or is it both? You know, our perspective can keep switching, like changing the focus on the lens, bringing things near and far into clarity. Any other? Yeah, Paul.
I don't remember that you explicitly discussed the section 3. Which we don't buy now. I have the feeling that could be explained. It is not beyond its explanation.
Yeah.
Particularly, birth neither appears nor is already existing, for example.
To me, this section means that life includes birth and death, and that birth and death are birth neither comes and goes because it is part of this whole reality of birth and death as one entity. Birth and death are like day and night. We call this one day, right? And it has two aspects. It has the aspect of day, and it has the aspect of night. Our usual thought is that our life is bracketed. It's got birth on one end and death on the other. Birth is constantly happening.
That's why it neither comes or goes.
Right. That's right. And it neither comes and goes because it is part of one larger reality. It's part of the reality of birth and death as one thing. You can't separate it off and say there's just birth, because there is no birth that doesn't imply an impending death.
But if it's continuously happening, how come it isn't already existing?
Because of the nature of birth.
Yeah, because
birth is becoming. And which is becoming can't already exist.
Right. Well,
that's my linear.
You're sitting next to somebody who is going to have this experience in a relatively
I'm having it right now.
Short time.
I'm birthing and dying.
Right. And you can only remember it.
Yeah.
I think.
I can't cognize
it. It's going to happen.
It's already, till something's already happened.
Right, you're already looking back at it. And
somebody
yet,
is.
is it Devin?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, there's something that's happening that's approaching, and then you'll be on the other side of it, and you will remember it, but you'll remember it indistinctly.
But
it's not that it didn't happen, right?
Memory is just something is being birthed right now.
Right. Time is being birthed right now. Time.
The memory
just,
did get birthed.
Right. Right.
And then so it's.
But the memory is not. Passing. The memory is not the same as a moment. Right.
Yeah.
Do you think it's possible that in the moment, though, you can actually meet the moment and experience it in the moment? And then when it's gone, and it's a memory or whatever, but isn't that what Zazen is? Meeting a moment and fully experiencing what is so?
Yes, but without... We're meeting... The thing that we're meeting the moment, every moment.
Right.
We're just...
Sometimes
you
we're
can't
asleep.
Hold on to it.
No. Right.
For a microsecond.
Yeah.
You know?
It's gone already.
It's just gone.
It's worth
so we're meeting moment after moment.
It's worth trying.
We try.
Well, there's the death moment after moment.
Right. And, you know, it's like, oh, this is a pretty great adventure. Trying to do this, you know? And it's like,
it's not graspable. Even
it's not graspable. And we fail. You know, it's like failing moment after moment, which is... allowing yourself to do that is a great relief. That's having failed, that's a good place to stop. Thank you very much. Let's close with the four bows.